is in abundance, sufficient for the luxury and convenience of the people in charge.
Jeffrey's Show.
And welcome to the Donald Jeffries Show. This is Donald Jeffries. I have a very special show lined up for tonight. It's going to be kind of a retrospective on a person I really, really admire. And we're going to start off with playing one of her old openings. And it'll be obvious who it is. I think it says, hopefully it says her name in there. And then we'll introduce her officially after that. So if you could play that.
Maria with an E, the mouth that roared, the Maria Heller Show. Number one show on the net each year because they know that though the mainstream press may be frightened, scared of cow, she's not afraid to tell the truth and to tell it loud. When there's a scam or scandal the others dare not handle, she'll hold up a candle. She's gonna shine, shine, shine a light of truth on you. She's the weapon of mass instruction.
MERA.net. MERA.net.
Good morning, world. Maria Heller here, alive and kicking in the high country of Arizona.
And that, as was obvious as she introduced herself, Maria Heller is our guest tonight. We're going to be looking back on her long career, and she's going to tell us exactly how long it's been. And I've tried to research a little, so has my producer, Chuck Ocelli, and we're not sure. She may be the longest tenured alternative type race radio host on the air. If not, she's certainly one of the longest tenured radio host. But Maria has been very supportive of me. We're switching roles here tonight because Maria has interviewed me many times, and no one has been more supportive of my book, Survival of the Richest. Sometimes I think she's the only one that's been promoting it. But so it's a pleasure to have her here and kind of celebrate her career. Maria, welcome to the Donald Jeffries Show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, we're switching roles here because you're used to interviewing me. So tell us, you know, how you got started, because, you know, you were – I assume it was around 2000. I think it was before 9/11. Maybe it was after 9/11. I don't know. But tell us what got you into this. And, you know, I think you were on terrestrial radio at first, right? So go over your career in radio.
Okay. Well, I never intended to do radio. It wasn't a conscious thing I thought about. I had a business partner in Las Vegas I was working with in 1998. Who was paying a guy in Vegas to do a radio show to promote her golf junkets for the high rollers in Vegas. And I was working with her through her business to see where all her money was going. And when I met with this guy doing the radio show, I told her, this guy sucks. I said, you're giving him $10,000 a month and he sucks. I guarantee you nobody's listening to him. She turned around and she says, well, you go buy airtime and you do the show. And I said, I don't want to do a show. I said, well, what do I talk about? She says, I don't care. And she threw, you know, a couple thousand bucks in my hands. I came back to Phoenix. I went into KFNX. And that was when I first met Jack Blood. He was my producer. And I told him I wanted to do a show for 6 months, which was basically just talking to promote her stuff, you know, on the breaks. And the show became a hit. It was the number one hit on the station. It was heard out of Rhode Island as well. So Jack was pushing station managers to put me on drive time. He said, if you put Maria on drive time, we'll knock everybody else out of the box. They did not want to do that. So when my six-month contract was up, I went into Jack and I shook his hand and I said, thanks, I'm done. And he said, you can't leave. And I said, what do you mean I can't leave? He said, you're the only one getting listeners. So I said, well, make me an offer I can't refuse. And they did. I was the only person to have a show on that station that I didn't pay for. But then eventually I got sick and tired of the owners because they were very small-minded, and I blew out of there. And the very same weekend, this young guy who had a crush on me, who was a rocker, invited me to go listen to him and his band play. And I didn't even want to go because I felt like I was his mother. But I decided to go. And he sat me at a table with a bunch of young people. And this man sitting next to me said, you know, I said, what do you do? And he said to me, well, I do web design. He said, what do you do? And I said, well, up until yesterday, I did radio. And that's when he told me his friend Jordan was trying to put together internet radio. And he was looking for hosts. And I said, internet radio, what's that? Because remember, in those years, I think this was right around 2000, the beginning of 2000, most computers didn't even have speakers. So I said, okay, I'll meet with this kid. And I meet with him on a Sunday. Monday, I was on the internet. And that was July of 2000. And I told him I would like to try it for a few months. It'll probably be fun. A few months turned into, I'm now in my 22nd year on the net.
Wow. That's and you just looking at, again, some of your guests, as I said, I've been your guest many times. And Chuck Celi has reminded me in the chat room that both him and mom also promoted Survival of the Richest. So thank you for that. I just know Maria does all the time. Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I got a letter just this week from a woman in Florida. I mean, it was a big, long email thanking me for putting you on the show with Survival of the Richest. And she went on and on and on, and she said she shares it everywhere. And I never got a chance to tell you because I just got that a few days ago.
Oh, that's so wonderful to hear. And again, it wouldn't happen without your platform and your glowing reviews of it. But, you know, just something you said there about the it kind of exemplifies what I talked about in the book, is that, you know, capitalism isn't always about profits, because in your case, you were the one bringing in fans to the station, and yet they still didn't want to put you in the drive time slot where you could drive even more fans. I mean, what does that tell you? That there are always other agendas going on, that it's not just about it seems to be about profits, but it's not, is it?
No, I think those two station managers were just jerks. and unfortunately, they were both Italian as I am. And I left them with a few parting Italian words to their face as I blew out of the studio.
So we're going to get to, I guess it's a good time to play, because again, I looked through your archives and there's so many great guests, you know, Jim Mars, people like that I would have, or Eustace Mullins, man, I would talk a little bit, just because we don't have a clip of Eustace Mullins. Eustace Mullins was probably the foremost critic of the Federal Reserve in modern times. He wrote Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and he was friends with Ezra Pound. I'm sure you know that, when Ezra Pound was in prison in St. Elizabeth Mental Hospital for 10 years. He was kind of his protege, and Ezra Pound told him, you know, write this book. But how did you get Eustace Mullins? I'm really envious of that.
Well, you know, it's funny because I just talked about that on my show this morning. So you might be reading my mind, but Eustace Mullins. I think I have two interviews with him in the archives. Mm-hmm. He was the one that interviewed and was friends with Ezra Pound, who was exposing the Federal Reserve. And Eustace did write the book, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve. Another book came out many years later by Ed Griffin on The Creature from Jekyll Island. So I have an interview on that as well. But how did I get Eustace on my show? One of the people I was working with on 9/11, his specialty was nanotechnology, Carl Schwartz. He came and brought me a copy of Eustace's book. And there must have been contact information in it. And all I did was send an email, said, you want to come on my show? And bingo, there it was.
Wow. Yeah, he was, I mean, he wrote some incredible books. And he was out there. You know, he was deep down the rabbit hole. But he would do wonderful on the internet. Like, if he had been younger, I'm sure he could have had a great show and a great blog and everything else. So I guess so you caught him, must have been the early years, right? He's probably been dead about 15 years or so.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking today about how many people I've had on my show that are dead, including.
Yeah.
So I'm still here until I'm not.
You're outlasting.
But you know, I used to have Bob Chapman, the international forecaster, monthly with me also. And Bob's work was great. Real facts and figures on the real economy, not the garbage they give us, you know, today.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people have come and gone, but I am super proud of my archives. And when I tell people it's as better than a college education, I'm not exaggerating. I mean, it's every topic you could possibly want to know about is there.
Yeah, it's a history lesson. It's one of the clips we're going to play is by, you know, Kitty Kelly later, who is you know, just you don't think of that normally with politics, but it's an intriguing clip. But let's play with the first clip because he's in order. The first one is from Howard Zinn, who I have been compared to by more than one person. I wasn't familiar with him until he died, unfortunately, but he sounds like we were on the same wavelength. But boy, what a people's historian, I think he called himself. I like that title. I like to think of myself that way. But let's, if we can play the clip of Howard Zinn. This is probably going to last, I don't know, 20 minutes or not 20, but about 5 minutes or so. So sit back and enjoy this.
Now, I know you were decorated in World War II, and a lot of people refer to World War II as the good war.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Well, it's, you know, World War II is a very complicated war, morally. I mean, there are wars that are not complicated, that are so obviously immoral and unnecessary, and of course Vietnam is a very good example of it. In fact, every war that we have fought since World War II has been, to my mind, immoral. None of the saving moral grace that World War II had. Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Panama, Grenada, the first Gulf War, the war on Afghanistan, and now the war on Iraq, all of them are absolutely indefensible from a moral point of view. All of them killing large numbers of people for no good reason. Now, in the case of World War II, and the reason I say it's complicated, is that World War II, there was a kind of real moral intention. I'm not sure the intention was on the part of the governments, that is the United States, Britain, Soviet Union. I'm not at all sure their intentions were moral. I think their intentions were more to halt the power of the Nazis, which was challenging the power of the old imperial powers. But the intention of people like me and so many others who fought in World War II, our intention was we wanted to defeat fascism and we wanted to bring democracy to the world. And we wanted to end the war. So our intentions were good. But the reason the war got complicated morally is that these intentions became somehow corrupted. We began to commit atrocities. I mean, the Nazis had committed atrocities. Now, we were committing atrocities. We were bombing civilian populations. It was killing 100,000 people, perhaps, in Dresden in one night of bombing. 50,000, 60,000 in Frankfurt and in Hamburg. And then, in the spring of 1945, we set Tokyo afire and killed perhaps 100,000 people in Tokyo. I mean, who were these people? They weren't the ones who bombed Pearl Harbor. They weren't vicious people. They weren't the ones who attacked the Philippines. They were just ordinary Japanese, and we massacred them.
Right.
And of course, came Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I was a bombardier in that war. And when I, you know, and I didn't question what I was doing. But afterward, when I looked at what we had done to human beings in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, when I thought back on my own bombing raids and realized that I had no idea of where my bombs were going and what they were doing, I came to the conclusion that war, even a war which has a kind of moral core somewhere inside it, like World War II, doesn't really solve fundamental problems. And it poisons everybody who engages in it. It poisoned us morally when we began killing large numbers of people. And then it poisoned the decades that followed, because then every war that we engaged in was compared to World War II. It was, World War II was used as a metaphor. They would say, we're fighting in Vietnam. Ho Chi Minh is Hitler. And so they were taking the good name of World War II and using it to plaster a kind of moral veneer over the very ugly wars that we were fighting.
Wow, just that was... That just absolutely brilliant analysis, and I'm right there with him. He mentioned Dresden, in Crimes and Cover-Ups, I covered all the Allied atrocities. Of course, when you do that, people think that you're supporting Hitler. No, but we're just trying to say that this is very complex, and I think he did a wonderful job. So, what was the rest of that conversation like? Because it sounds to me like, boy, that was just been a treat to talk to someone like that.
Well, I was very, very lucky to get Howard on my show 3 times.
Wow.
And I think I still have 2 of them in the archives because I can't keep 10,000 shows on my server. I'd like to, but I don't have the money for that. A lot of people don't know Howard Zinn came from Brooklyn, and I grew up in Brooklyn, so that was our commonality starting out in that interview. And by the second time that I interviewed Howard, it was funny because they had just come out with, how they do every year, that the sexiest man alive thing. And I embarrassed him on air. It was like I could feel his face turning red. I said, Howard, you should be nominated for the sexiest man alive. And he got so embarrassed. But to me, intellect is sexy. And not only was he intellectual, he was an activist. He was all for. He said sometimes civil disobedience is called for. This is the guy, the same generation as Daniel Ellsberg, who I also got to interview, which is still on my site about the Pentagon Papers. And one of the things I remember at the end of the show with Daniel Ellsberg, this was when Bush was in office. He signed off by saying, "I guess I'll see you in the camps, Maria." And yeah. I said, well, obviously that'll be the only place there's intelligent people, so I'm okay with that. But yeah, we talked about the Holocaust some, and then I think I surprised Howard because I said to him after he was talking about the Holocaust, I said, but what about the silent Holocaust, Howard? And he was stymied. And he said, well, what do you mean, Maria? And I said, the silent Holocaust on the Palestinian people. Mm-hmm. And it took him, it took him a good 30 seconds to process what I had just said to him. Mm-hmm. And he was in total agreement and surprised because he never thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was
a great guy. And yet today, in Texas and some other states, his books are banned in school. And he's the only one that's really written, besides the true history of the United States.
Well, I mean, like I said, a couple times my name has been coupled with his, and it's also been coupled with Dave McGowan, which we're going to talk about him a lot later on in the show. But so I'm honored, to be mentioned in the same breath of these people. And Howard Zinn was just, I would have loved to have talked to him, but unfortunately, I guess he's been gone for 10 years or something himself, I guess. But
yeah, I don't remember, but it's been a long time. But I even talked to some of the original. We just passed Labor Day. Mm-hmm. I even talked to some of the original men who fought for Labor Day rights, who took over factory buildings, even though they knew it was against the law. They did what they had to do to bring us this weekend that now has only become what they call a shopping weekend. And one of them was Julius Margolis. And he talked, I don't no longer have those on my site because I had to thin my archives down. But he was a real American hero. And, all of that started with the Triangle Shirt Fire.
Yes.
But a lot of Americans don't even know history. They don't even know about that. Labor Day, let's go out and buy sheets.
I don't have it in front of me, but I wrote about it in Crimes and Cover-Ups or Survive. I forget which book it was in. But the labor leader who's completely forgotten now, and they hung his body and put a note on it as a warning, you're next or something. Do you know what I'm talking about there? What was that guy's name?
You're not talking about Huey Long.
No. They didn't hang him.
Offhand, I don't know. People have to realize through the 22 years of doing my show, I would venture to say that I've read no less than 1,000 books. So the books that stand out in my mind, like yours, are ones that I constantly refer to. But I wish I could remember everything, but the brain only has so much space.
Well, I'm all the more honored that you refer to my books when considering how much great stuff you've read. Certainly, and how many people, you know, how many great guests you've had, because, you know, we're with the next clip, which we'll play in a little bit, is from Gore Vidal, who I think is probably, along with Kurt Vonnegut, I think those are probably the last two great American writers in my mind, you know, that I think of in terms of, you know, along with the classical people.
Right.
Because, you know, because they were in that category. And but it's just, you know, just you must just be so honored that you got to talk to these people. And were any of them, or all these people you talked to, especially some of the bigger names, Ellsberg, Gore Vidal, people like that, did any of them have an attitude with you like they thought, you know?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Great.
What's interesting is my audience, till today, still says the same things, that they have heard these people on other shows, you know, TV, mm-hmm. wherever, but mm-hmm. never heard them talk about the things that I would pull out of them. Mm-hmm. And that talking to my guest, they feel like they're just listening to two old friends having a cup of coffee. See, I don't want, and I still don't use a cheat sheet. I will read their material, learn their material, and pick out the stuff that no one ever gets to hear. Mm-hmm. I think it's more pleasurable for the guest not to have to answer the same 10 questions. And I think it's respectful. It's respectful of their work. It's respectful of my work. And it's respectful of my audience.
Right, right. Well, that's good that... okay, Chuck is telling me Frank Little. I think that's the guy, Frank Little. But it's... and you know, that's awful. And then, you know, you've written too many books. When I can't remember whether it was in Crimes and Cover-Ups or Survival of the Richest, but it would have fit in either one. But yeah, he was... He was one of the early labor leaders, and they somebody in chat said, yeah, we have some great people in the chat room.
There were a lot of people that gave their lives for what people take for granted now. And if we continue to take it for granted, we're going to go right back to history.
Yeah. It's and that's, you know, and that's what you were especially when, yeah, they hung Frank Little here. That's exactly right. But yeah, what was the name of that guy? My memory's not good today. Recently I watched it. I thought of you when I was watching it. It was a documentary on, I think it was in West Virginia. It was a coal mine. It was a particular coal mine. And they made a great documentary about the behind the scenes. And if you see how these people live, and I guess, I don't know how many coal miners are left, but just how many generations really like that. You know, the most awful work, and then just imagine, well, they showed how they, you know, they went down to the coal mines on these little lifts and everything, and they're well underground, and I mean, they could cave in at any time. They're breathing in that awful stuff and getting black lung and dying before their time. I mean, this was horrible, and even then, they didn't want to pay them, and they had to strike for their rights. I don't know if you saw that. I wish I could remember the title of it. It was, I think it was made back in about 72, 73, or something, during one of the big strikes mm-hmm. they had there, but it was really, it really caught my eye, and I thought, wow, and I need to write more. I'm writing Hidden History 3 now, and I need to put more about that in there, because I didn't cover the coal miners and those kind of people
right
as much as I should have, because those are the kind of people Huey Long was fighting for. And as Tom Dooley was hung, don't recall what he did. So did Citizen Exit. Yeah,
Tom Dooley.
Yeah, hang on. Well, they used to have some great Joe Hill. Joe Hill. Remember that dream they saw Joe Hill last night?
All right. But you know, they even made a song about Tom Dooley's hanging.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, hang down your head, Tom Dooley.
Well, that was the left. Right. What is, you know, does anybody on the left today talk at all about labor? I mean, labor is a word you don't even hear anymore.
No, we don't hear the word peace. Either.
No, nothing about labor, nothing about peace, nothing about prisoner rights. I mean, it's just it's really ridiculous. But so yeah, I guess we can play, if you want to play the Gore Vidal clip now, because this, we can obviously talk a lot about him. He's a fascinating character. So let's listen to Gore Vidal.
Congressman Conyers, who's a Democrat from Michigan, is the minority head of the Judiciary Committee of the House. The committee is totally Republican, and they are not about to investigate anything that might turn out unpleasant for them. So Conyers went out with several other congressmen and a very good crew of staffers just to go county by county, district by district, examining what happened in Ohio. Well, the story is hair-raising, and it is now in this report that he has made, to which I have written an introduction. You would think that after all, he's a man of some distinction. He went to a lot of work to get this thing done for nothing, pro bono publico. You'd think a newspaper might be interested in it. You'd think the paper of record, the New York Times, whisper its name, would print it, refer to it. There's been no print review of the book anywhere in the United States.
Right. That's terrible. And it sounds like pretty much every guest I have on my show, even top names, can't get their books reviewed as long as it has anything negative to do with this administration.
No, it's total censorship. And the whole thing, I do not want to sound too distressed, but I am distressed, that the whole thing is resembling Germany in the 1930s. I was alive in the 30s, and I knew a lot of people who had to were forced to leave Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And were denounced by their own government, which of course was the most dreadful government in the history of Europe thus far. And we seem to be going down the same path, with the best will in the world, I'm sure, but the best will in the world does not make up for censorship. It does not make up for telling lies to the people.
Right.
A little confusion. Nor going in for preemptive wars. You know, we didn't elect Mr. Bush at all first time around. But had we elected him, he didn't tell us that his policy already was to invade Iraq. Now, here's a country that's a friend of ours, no danger to us at all, no potential danger at all. But he got it into his head that we should sort of conquer the world, particularly those parts of the world with oil. So he knocks down Afghanistan at great expense to us. Then he knocks down Iraq, and he's still knocking Iraq down, but they don't stay down. And here we are engaged in two wars, preparing to knock down Iran, Syria, and two or three other countries in Middle Asia. With, at the end of it, I suppose we'll try to take on China, in which case we'll be defeated.
Right.
We're defeated by Indochina, sometimes called Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is an ugly position to put us, the people, in. Not only didn't we elect him to start wars, but we elected him because some people found Cousin Albert too boring for words, others found Kerry just too confused. Whatever reasons, Americans have always hated foreign wars. We had to be dragged screaming into World War I and also into World War II.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of people contend that the attacks of September 11th were a Reichstag fire to get us behind these wars of George Bush. Do you agree with that?
I agree that it has been used as that. I'm not a conspiracy theorist in that I think that George Bush was behind the 9/11 attack. First of all, I don't think he's that well organized, or the people around him are not that competent.
Mm-hmm.
But what did happen was the Reichstag fire was used by Hitler in order to suspend civil liberties. He put in his own USA Patriot Third Reich Act, suspending all sorts of liberties, using much the same language, or we have used much the same language that he used. Actually, much of the USA Patriot Act is the work of Clinton, and Clinton thought that one up right after the Oklahoma City bombings of Timothy McVeigh. And they came up with this, you know, insane document, which suspends habeas corpus, freedom of speech, assembly. It suspends the Constitution. Then they put it on the shelf and forgot about it until the new administration, the Bush people, came in. Then comes 9/11. We may never know who's behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly they dust off this draconian code telling us that we have lost our liberties, that we can't consult it.
Right.
We can be held without charges in Guantanamo and so forth and so on. It happened so quickly. I always thought, I have antennae for this kind of thing. I've spent my life with American and European history. I thought I could certainly tell a coup d'etat when it was coming. There would be signs. There weren't many. Suddenly there it was.
Well, just important, fascinating. I mean, Gorbachev, again, I envy you talking to these people. So what did, I want to talk about 9/11 in a minute since he brought, you know, it was mentioned there. But what other things of interest did you discuss with Gorbachev? Did you talk at all about the JFK or the RFK assassinations?
Well, we talked about the JFK assassination. I remember that. The stand down on 9/11. But the main reason that Gore was on the show is his work on the stolen election in Ohio and compared it to the stolen election of 2000 when the Supreme Court gave George W. Bush the presidency.
Now, this was in Ohio in 2004?
I think it was 2004. Yeah, because I interviewed him on June 13th, 2005. Okay. And we talked about the 2004 presidential election with Bush, of course.
Right.
What a lot of people don't know, because he made a quick reference to it, Al Gore was his cousin.
That's right.
And he made that quick mention that maybe people found my cousin Al too boring. Listen, I saw his work, and just like everything else, I sent him an email, and he responded. And he didn't even have a publicist. And he came on and gave me a full hour of, you know, great radio. But you could look back, and this was in 2005. We were discussing the comparisons between Nazi Germany and America. Right. So if you go from 2005 to right now, it's I would say it's 100 times worse.
Oh. Exactly. I don't know. Some places we may be going past anything any other country's ever done. I don't know. I mean, they're talking about Bill Gates trotted out the thing, and you know, I'm getting, you know, to where I could collect Social Security, where he's talking about, you know, maybe we should deny Social Security benefits to the unvaccinated. You know, that's the kind of stuff that scares me. It's like, okay, I paid into that my entire life, and now,
first they tried to bribe us to take the shot.
Yeah.
Get the shot, get a free hamburger, get a free beer, get $100. Yeah. Okay. That didn't work. So now, you know, demonizing people who, if you think about it, really think about it, I want your audience to think about it. The FDA has for how many decades say we need more trials and more tests on medical cannabis.
Right.
And yet they did very little trials and tests on this vaccine that first they tried, you know, bribing us, and now they're threatening us.
Exactly.
So people need to look at that, and they should, you know, you should think about it, because they're still discounting the myriad of good uses of medical cannabis.
Right.
And yet, you know, they want everybody to take these experimental drugs because they're not a vaccine. And now they're going to punish you if you don't. You know, some insurance companies say they're going to raise your insurance if you don't have the shot. Okay. Now, listen, never in my life, I was alive when the first polio shot came out, okay? Never in my life have I seen anybody try to force the shot, bribe you to take the shot, or threaten to take away your civil liberties because you won't take the shot.
Yeah. And if anything could be clear to us at this point, Maria, you know, and you've been around a little longer than I have, but I've been around long enough to know that if there's one thing for certain, our leaders couldn't care less about our health. The idea that they want us, I mean, they're all eugenicists, virtually every one of them.
Of course. Think of the Georgia Guidestones, where they want to reduce the population to 500,000. Okay. Yeah. Bill Gates, Fauci, you know, everybody's involved in the patents on this coronavirus going back to 2003, which I covered on my show, Facts and Figures, Patent Numbers, a couple of weeks ago. So you tell me, you know, when the government, I have said this so long, even my kids say, Ma, you've been saying that your whole life. I always say it and I'll continue to say it. The only thing I trust our government to do is kill us all.
Well, they're definitely can be good at that, or at least they're trying. But so, yeah, it would be interesting to see what someone like a Gore Vidal or Howard Zinn.
But they're probably in shock or laughing. I would think they're laughing hysterically, just looking down at us and saying, "We tried to tell you, but you didn't want it." You know, and I know that'll be my thing. I even say that on my show. When I'm gone, I'm just going to look down and say, I tried to tell you, but you want to know. I think that's, I don't know, was that from a Rolling Stones song? I don't remember.
Yeah. I mean, the most disillusioning thing about all this is that people that are awake to any degree, it ought to be so obvious to them and to you and I and everyone that we're just really outnumbered. I mean, the stupidity out there is just mind-boggling, and that they really – they basically – there's so many people who just, you know, appeal to – just listen to whatever the authorities say, and they're willing to do it. And I'm experiencing some of that in my, you know, my own extended family, because, you know, I'm being ostracized. My kids and I are the only ones that were unvaccinated. And, you know, I don't think they're, when they, if they don't want to let us come and play in any reindeer games. Do you have any of that going on in your family?
Are you kidding? Even my rabid Trump fan relatives haven't taken the shot.
Okay.
So, yeah, no. I guess there's a limit to stupidity. I don't know. But I'm sure you saw my, which I had to go in under a pseudonym on Facebook,
yes,
since they
decided
to strip all my
Sophia
pages.
Sophia Loren, yeah.
I saw Sophie's up there. But I made a meme, and it's these two roaring lions. And it really is something for everybody to listen to, because if you think you're going to convince the willfully ignorant, you're just wasting your breath. And what I put was, there's no more time to wake up the sheep. It's time to gather the lions.
I saw that. Yeah. That's great. We have to hope there's enough lions out there, because it's at the speed it's moving, you know, it's really terrifying. Because at this point, I don't, you know, look at Australia. I mean, if we be, Australia is just straight down. Was it Victoria, Australia? Wow. I mean, I don't know how bad the Nazis or Soviets or Mao Zedong or whatever you want to say from some foreign country. I don't know that any of them were any worse than what we're seeing in Victoria, Australia right now.
Well, I mean, look, you got to look at this as a worldwide shutdown.
Yeah.
This, you know, people talk about the Great Reset. You know, I'm afraid to see what's going to come out of the other end of it.
Yes.
But then you have to also look at, you know, the people that gave us the Statue of Liberty, who actually know how to fight for liberty, the French.
Yeah.
You know, they're out by the hundreds of thousands in every city protesting.
Yep.
You know, I don't understand what Americans' problems are, even though I do. Okay. You can't just chuck it off to them being stupid. Okay. They're stupid. Okay. Some are. Some are lazy, too lazy to do their own research. They're all mind programmed. They're all mind controlled by the TV they watch or the media, which William Colby said the CIA has owned since the 1970s. Mm-hmm. They're on a bad diet. They're struggling working multiple jobs just to try to survive. You know, now we have a lot of them just lost their unemployment, a lot of them getting evicted. As long as you keep the people distracted, they don't have time for critical thinking. They don't have time to do any homework, let alone the crappy job our education system does.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
In a way, I feel sorry for them, but not sorry enough to get involved in a discussion. You cannot convince those whose minds are already made up.
Okay, we have a couple questions from the chat room here. Let's see. Did Maria – this is an interesting one. Did Maria really date Bill Cooper back in 96?
Bill Cooper? No. Why would anybody think I dated Bill Cooper? I have talked about his book, which is great, yeah. Behold the Pale Horse.
Right,
but
right,
no,
right.
I never dated Bill Cooper. My last husband's first name was Bill, but it wasn't Cooper.
Okay.
It was Heller, and I just kept the name because I was used to it.
Okay, well, I don't know where you got that information from, but
I don't either.
Maria, I don't know.
What a couple.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, well, that would have been a power conspiracy couple there, boy, wouldn't it?
Both would have been shot in his driveway at midnight that night.
All right. Okay, I'm trying to see. You know, I can't. Chuck, type your question out in the chat room. For some reason, I can't. I mean, in the chat room, because I in the Skype for some reason it won't let me open it. So if you can, yeah, I don't know why it does. Stupid. I hate Skype. Did I mention I hate Skype, especially since Microsoft took it over? If you could type those out in the chat room, because I can only see, for some reason I click on it, it won't open, so I can't see the rest of your question. So, does Maria see any problems with the 2020 election?
What?
This is a question from Mr. Ocelli in the chat room.
Do I see any problems, what you mean, with Biden's election?
Yes, the 2020 election.
You know what? If there were, I didn't even bother looking.
I think you
get rid of that thief, criminal, traitor, buffoon, moron. That if Satan would have won, I would have been happy. Okay,
he was
and just to preface that a little bit, So people don't think I just hate Donald Trump now. Okay, I hated Donald Trump my whole life. He's 2 years older than me. He grew up in Queens. I grew up in Brooklyn. Everybody in all five boroughs always knew what he was. He was a whoremaster. He was a ganef, as the Jews would say, which means a thief, a braggart, a loser. Everything he's touched turns to crap. So he's been repulsive to a real New Yorker forever. Okay. Right. I still, even though he's out, even though unfortunately he still speaks, I still can't believe that he was president. It never could sink in on me through the whole 4 years that that dolt was president. Well, my mind could not handle it.
You mentioned about the vaccines and the people that even love Trump and your family. What do you think about the I talk about this all the time, is that the vast majority of the people, I think, that are skeptical about the vaccines and against the lockdown were Trump supporters. And but Trump himself has come out consistently and bragged about he's the father of the vaccine and you should think of me when you get it. And his supporters don't see any disconnect. I don't understand how they can't. They continue to still. But this has been what the Trump cult has done all along. No matter what he does or says, right, he's playing 4,000 degree chess, and you know it doesn't matter. You know,
he took the shot. He was scared shit when he got COVID when he was in the hospital. He came close to death. He asked the doctors, "Am I dying?" Too bad he didn't. But you know, then he comes out and he gives a speech where he whips off his mask. He could barely breathe. Yeah. At the White House to show that, you know, he's Superman. I'm sure you've seen the memes his stupid fans make of him looking like he's, you know, Superman. But, you know, why didn't he tell people, I got the shot? He still doesn't want to own up to it. You know, just like all the Republicans, they've all got the shots.
Sure. Well, there's no disagreement.
They've all got the shots. They won't admit it.
Right. That's what I resent about the establishment left acts as if this is, and thank you for pointing that out, Citizen GX. I stand corrected. That's true. Minorities are the vast majority of the unvaxxed. Black people are by far the largest percentage of those who haven't been vaccinated. But
can you blame them?
Well, no. I mean, I don't trust the man. Why would they? But
history. You know black history in this country.
Right.
From Tuskegee to what they're still doing. You know that they've been feeding our prisoners in America ivermectin without telling them that. Okay. You think about Tuskegee, you know, the syphilis test to see, you know, how bad you can suffer giving them placebos. They did nothing to help those black people. You look at the countries that Bill Gates brings his vaccines to, and then all of a sudden they have an outbreak of the disease from the vaccine.
Well, look at, is it Nigeria that passed a resolution in their house basically to ban Bill Gates from the country? And I think India did the same thing, didn't they?
Well, I mean, they're smarter than Americans. What? Because everybody looks at Bill Gates and all they think about is micro crap, which is what it is. Okay, there's no comparison between Microsoft products and Apple. I also, by the way, every time I walk into an Apple store, I always astound the young people there by telling them that I actually have an interview with Steve Wozniak, who's the real founder of Apple, in my archives.
Wow, do you? You've talked to everybody, I swear.
If I find them interesting, I know my audience will find them interesting.
You don't have to go into this in detail because we talked a little bit about on there, but there is a question from the chat room. Does Maria still talk to Craig McGowan? You don't have to say that, but I understand you haven't for a while.
Haven't talked to Craig in a while. I sometimes hear from Dave's daughter, but I haven't heard from her in a while either.
Okay. Is there? So Georgia Guidestone states the maximum population must be 500 million, says End to Fed. I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of that out there, and I don't know. I mean, I guess all of us have to hope we're among the people that are left standing. But this we're living in very scary times because these killing people or wanting to kill people, the eugenicist line, that's been out there from Prince Philip to all these people have talked about it, and I don't know. You think they're finally going to make it happen?
I hope not. I'm going to keep doing what I do until I can't. You know, I can only do, every American can only do what they're good at. and what they can do, what they have time to do. But everybody should be participatory in these days. You know, don't leave it to the next guy. You know, there's not going to be another Paul Revere. You get on your horse and start running.
Exactly. Be the change you want to be. I want to make sure we fit all these clips in. That we got Kitty Kelly coming up next. I want to hear this. This is interesting. This is a little different, but so if you can play Kitty Kelly.
She was a very fun interview.
Yeah.
Kitty, I want to read something that your publicist sent me, because this is just, I mean, I've read it in your book, and I've read a lot of it in your book, but it just blew my mind, and I just want to read this so my listeners can understand where we're going. The pressure of the White House put on mainstream media to either ignore or trash Kitty Kelly and her book. Not every media outlet was cowed or influenced, but many key players like Newsweek, The Today Show, Meet the Press, Larry King Live were. Kelly was even fired from the Washingtonian after almost 30 years as a respected contributing editor because of pressure from the Bush camp, and that the Republican National Committee and Republican attack dogs tried to stop publication of her book. Did you actually get fired because of this book?
Yeah, I did. I have been a contributing editor to the Washingtonian magazine for 30 years, and I was taken off the masthead. And when I asked the editor why, he said, because of the Bush book. And I said, well, I don't understand. And he said, you wrote too revealingly about the president and his personal life and the Bushes. And I said, come on, Jack, what are you talking about? It's a biography. And then it hit me. The owner of the magazine is a Bush appointee. His name is Philip Merrill, and he is president of the Export-Import Bank, and he's very close to Dick Cheney, a personal friend of George Herbert Walker Bush, mm-hmm. and now a presidential appointee. So I didn't even argue any further. That's what it was.
Right. Did you think that this was even a possibility when you started writing the book?
Not that. There were two things that happened. After the book came out, and there was all the controversy, Maria, if you had told me that living in Washington, D.C., I would experience any kind of partisan blowback, I'd say, no, not possible. It's a very diverse city. It's predominantly Democratic, but it's just not that way. Well, was I stupid and naive? I not only lost my job on the Washingtonian masthead, but I also was asked not to take part in a benefit for the Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. Now, I point those two things out because the whiff of McCarthyism, while you might expect it in certain areas, you would never expect it in the media or in the arts, and that's what I found very, very frightening. I mean,
well, unfortunately, a lot of writers are being, are being censored by publishing houses. It seems that, you know, a lot of the really good writers can't get their publishers to put their books out, even if they've done their books before.
I don't know about that. I do think that publishing is always in a state of turmoil, and they're always trying to second guess what will be successful. When a writer signs with a publisher, you sign, like, you know, 3 years before your book's to come out, 4 years sometimes.
Right.
And so a publisher doesn't exactly know where to make their investments. But it is quite true that that kind of censorship, people are afraid to be on the wrong side. It's like during the 1950s when people started whispering in elevators. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it would get that bad. I really didn't. And I was wrong. Now, the fact that I was taken off the masthead of the Washingtonian certainly hasn't hurt me economically. But it was frightening nevertheless, because it told me something about what's happening in the country.
Right.
And it's happening in a city where it's the nation's capital.
And it's very scary days for our democracy, as we, you know, say we're bringing democracy elsewhere. We're losing our rights left and right. But that's a story for another day.
Fascinating stuff. Boy, so did you ask her anything about some of her other, because I wrote about what she you know, really trashed Oprah Winfrey. I think it's a huge fraud. I put that in Survival of the Richest. And also her fascinating stuff about Frank Sinatra and Reagan and Nancy Nancy Reagan in the White House.
BJ Nancy.
Yes.
Well, you know, what's interesting about Kitty and her work, in her book, it's very clear that she offers a $10,000 reward to anyone who can say anything she has in there is a lie. No one ever collected on it. Not a one Bush challenged it. So the truth hurts is the way I see it. You know, she talked about what a pig George Herbert Walker Bush is. You know, let's not forget how much he changed his war story. But, you know, for people listening who might actually still honor George H.W. Bush, Google the Franklin cover-up, okay, yes, where he was, you know, sneaking in boys to the White House while he was president. So we have had nothing but the worst people you could possibly imagine in charge of us. And today's Supreme Court should be disbanded because it's the worst court, I think, since the country began. But, you know, there was Kitty, you know, she's saying $10,000 if you can prove anything in this book is a lie. And no one came up with it. No one's
ever sued her, right?
For whatever she had to say about Oprah, I agree, because Oprah's a sellout. You know, when she first started, she was a legitimate reporter. But, you know, like most people, they either sell out or buy in. I've been offered to sell out and buy in, and I can't because my father taught me to have a conscience and integrity.
Yeah, well, I don't know how you can, like, Oprah was, you know, I said at the time before I knew Kitty Kelly wrote it, I mean, why is she claiming credit for giving these cars and things like that away to the audiences when they're being donated by General Motors or whatever? She's
well,
not giving, like,
that. Most of the audience doesn't even take the car because they can't afford to pay the taxes.
Yes, it's incredible. I mean, but she still gets the good public relations. Oh, look how generous
she doesn't get it on my show.
Yeah.
I always tell people, don't just pay attention to who I have on my show. Pay attention to who's never on my show.
Right.
And, you know, when I think about what Kitty was saying, I think about the interviews I did with Jesse Ventura, which are great interviews. You know, Jesse was in the dark about 9/11.
Yeah.
Until his son showed him loose change. Mm-hmm. And once he saw loose change, Jesse went nuts. And then they suppressed Jesse because he was supposed to have, I think, a TV show. I'm not sure it was a TV show or a book. They gave him the money, and then they shelved it. And there was nothing he could do to get it out because
the
contract was done.
He had the Jesse Ventura's The Conspiracy Show ran for a couple seasons on True TV.
And again,
that's where I first met Sean Stone, who I later had met and become friends with. But he got his start along with Tyrell Ventura, the guy you mentioned, Jesse's son. So it's Oliver Stone's son and Jesse's son. It's kind of cool, but... That was the highest rated show True TV has ever had.
Yeah. And
so what did they do? They canceled it. So again, it's their other agendas. It's not about profits.
Listen, I did a show many years ago on programming your mind through TV, predictive programming. I forget the name of the book and the author, but I'm sure it's still on my site because it's one of those things I'll never get rid of. It's hard for me to decide which ones to keep, which ones to get rid of because I think they're all good. But you got to understand, I have almost 300 DVDs backing up all my shows. Each one has at least 20 shows on them. So I have to pick and choose. But you didn't ask me the big question. You didn't say who is your favorite out of all.
We're gonna get to that. But yeah, let's go for the break. Who's your favorite guest you've ever interviewed?
The only one that I lost my cool with. And I promised myself that I would keep calm because to me, Howard Zinn, Gore Vidal, all these other big names that I've interviewed, they're just regular people to me, okay? Mm-hmm. And you grow up in New York, you have a very thick skin because I used to see a lot of movie stars and whatnot on the subways just like me. So I was never impressed by that. But I would say that the one time I lost it and I didn't think that I would, I try to control myself, was when I interviewed Dr. Arun Gandhi, who happens to be Mahatma Gandhi's grandson. And I had people in my audience who were old enough then to remember Mahatma Gandhi and how he spoke. They were crying listening to that show because this guy was like a dead ringer for his grandfather. And even though I promised myself I was going to keep cool, I immediately went to, because I had rewatched the movie about Gandhi. I had rewatched Gandhi like two nights before. And it just blurted out of me, Donald, like I was a five-year-old kid. I said, I have to ask you, what was it like to have Gandhi as your grandfather? And I just lost it. And he was very gentlemanly and sweet about it. That was one interview that blew my mind, that I would have that on my show. Wow. Of course, a lot of the Kennedy experts, you know, when I was a kid, I think I was, I don't know, 11 or 12 when Kennedy was assassinated. I knew immediately watching TV that what we were being shown was bullshit. But never in a million years as that little girl did I think I would get to interview all the top people in the JFK. I'm sorry that Jim Garrison was dead before I started my show. I would have loved to interview him. But I mean, everybody from Barb McClellan, who was Lyndon Johnson's attorney.
Right.
And it's interesting because when I had Barr on my show, and everybody should read his book on LBJ's involvement in Kennedy's assassination, and what a murdering, drunk, disgusting, womanizing piece of crap he was. His sons were working at the time in the Bush administration.
Yes, Scott McClellan was his press secretary.
Right. So I had asked Barr before the show, can I mention that your son is working for the current administration? He said no. He didn't want what we were doing to put his son in any position of danger, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm sure there must have been some disagreements over what he was writing between father and son there. I don't know, but
right.
To consider who he was working for. But so did you ever have Mark Lane on your show?
No, I haven't. I have a whole section called Assassinations on my site where I interviewed not just people on the Kennedy assassination, but on Bobby's assassination, on Martin Luther King's assassination, on the murder of John Kennedy, Johnny Jr.
Yes, yes.
No one's done a better job of that than John Hankey. Okay.
Right.
And everybody should see John Hankey's film on who killed JFK Jr. And you can see it on YouTube. John Hankey has a channel there. And then John Hankey, the last time he was on, was a real anti-Trump person, and he still has video on that on Trump, and he has a really good sense of humor, you know, very similar to Dave McGowan's. So if you understand his humor, but when I got his film, I showed it to a man I knew who was a pilot, and by the time he was done watching that film, he was up in arms. He says, I need to show this to all my other pilot friends.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, you really need to see it.
Oh, it's great. I had John Hankey on my other show a few months back, but and we discussed JFK Jr. As you know, I wrote a lot about JFK Jr. myself. And I thank you from Anon 0800 in chat room says Donald Jeffries does the best JFK Jr. Well, the research community doesn't think so. They ignore it like the plague, unfortunately. But and we have some things about Jesse Ventura at MSNBC. He did have a short-lived show on MSNBC, Jesse's Ventura's America on MSNBC. And I remember, I think he was going – it didn't Alec Baldwin also had a show, and he was going to try to do show on the JFK assassination, and they yanked that too.
Oh yeah, I watched the first few episodes, and then it was gone.
Absolutely.
So listen, we live in a world where the truth will get you killed, and the bigger you lie, the more people love you. So the plan to de-educate America is complete. The mind control is complete. You know, I just had to recently switch gyms. And the gym I go to plays Newsmax on the TV. Okay. Now, I have to tell you, I didn't watch Newsmax. I never would. But what I see on there frightens me to the core. It's nothing but 100% lies. And I said, okay, but if people are watching this, which makes Fox look like CNN, and watching Fox News, what else are they going to think? Because to them, the television is their god. Okay, if it was on TV, it has to be real.
Right.
If it's not on TV, it's not true.
Absolutely. And there, so we're getting ready for a commercial break here. We're hearing Huey again. So let's take a break. We'll come back with more Maria, a lot more clips, more reminiscence, and more ranting and raving with Maria Hella. We'll be right back after these words.
Goddamn time at wait they wake up. Hell, I've been talking about this since 1959, about the corruption, the incredible lies, deception of the entire superstructure of Western civilization, and the incredible treason, lunacy, lies, deception. It's just amazing how much has been done in the past 100 years to the human family.
That was Jolden Maxwell on the Arcelli Effect. For more pods with Jolden and Chuck, search Arcelli.com, along with hundreds of other shows and topics as presented by Chuck Arcelli on Arcelli.com. Thanks for listening.
Chili.com.
Hi there, this is John Barber, and you're listening to the most informed man in America, my friend, fellow author, and raconteur, the great Donald Jeffries Show.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
In a time of fake news, fake politicians, and fake fiat currency, it's getting harder to find the genuine article. That's why when it comes to precious metals, I call the team I can trust. This is David Knight from my friends at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Proudly veteran-owned and operated, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange is your home for gold and silver coins, bullion, jewelry, and more. Prices and inventory are updated daily, so you get the most competitive possible pricing. And when it's time to sell your gold and silver items, they pay top dollar. Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange also accepts and deals in Bitcoin. Call or text the owner, Tony Arterburn, today at 888-667-1836. That's 888-667-1836. Or just go to wisewolf.gold. From bullion to Bitcoin, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
Revelation through conversation. Humphreys Show.
The Donald Jeffrey Show. We're talking to the legendary Maria Heller, the mouth that roared, fantastic, courageous voice for truth for the working class, and the kind of I think she considers herself on the left, but it's the kind of left that I grew up wanting to be on and was on for a very long time, a civil libertarian left, and the kind of left that cares about working rights and disparity of wealth and our prison industrial complex and so much more. But so Maria, let's talk about just a little bit about what's been in the news. Sirhan Sirhan, before we play the last couple of clips, Sirhan Sirhan finally, amazingly enough, was approved for parole. But I don't expect the governor, whoever it is out there, to sign it. And he's got more than half the Kennedy kids are against it. So what are your thoughts on that?
Please. Sirhan Sirhan had zero to do. He was distraction. Okay,
right.
He was a Manchurian candidate. He didn't remember it when it happened. He doesn't remember it now. He was not the person that did the shooting. The other guy who got shot even admitted it, where the shots came from. But hey, remember that was, I think, the beginning of the demonization of Muslim people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he should have been released the day he was arrested. But, you know, I've covered that, you know, in depth, you know, the girl with the polka dot dress. I mean, all of it. It's after a while, you can see when these things happen that it's a false flag.
Exactly.
You know, while you're looking one way, they're looking another way. But, you know, Johnson needed all the Kennedys gone. The mob needed all the Kennedys gone, especially since Bobby was going after the mob, even though it was the mob that put his brother in office. So, you know, and then, you know, the slim chance that his son, who was, you know, he could have been the cover of GQ magazine, was wanting to work on a new investigation of his father's death.
Yes, yes.
And then a kid who was an expert pilot supposedly crashed his plane.
Yeah, well, we know that's completely ridiculous. What do you think of because most of the Kennedy children obviously are, and I was really shocked to see Rory Kennedy, who's produced a couple really great documentaries on the people of Appalachia who don't get talked about very much, the poorest people in America, and they just kind of get dismissed. But she took out the New York Times gave her a platform to say, you know, don't. I mean, she's never spent any time analyzing her father's assassination at all. She, you know, they haven't bothered with it. Now she's saying, don't let us kill her out. But RFK Jr. is still standing strong. What are your thoughts on RFK Jr.? He's kind of amazing. He's getting more and more radical.
I love him.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah, he's great.
And I agree with him. You know, he says that he talked with Sirhan, and he believed he should be paroled. But then, you know, the truth might come out. You know, maybe the guy will have a lucid moment where the truth comes out and he might actually remember what happened there. You know, and it's the same thing with all the scapegoats, you know, the lone gunmen that they always seem to have, you know. But you got to give credit to Martin Luther King's Jr.'s kids.
Yes.
For a separate investigation proving that it was a conspiracy and a government conspiracy that killed their father.
Well, I've got
to. But
how
many Americans know that?
No, it got almost no publicity. Yeah, you're right. The Lloyd Jowers trial. Exactly. But Martin Luther King's family were real profiles in courage compared to the Kennedys. And I always compare the two because Coretta Scott King, at an advanced age, you know, traveled across state lines to testify for James R. Ray to get a new trial. And Ethel Kennedy, I don't know if she actually wrote it or not, but I don't know if you've seen that type statement about how, you know, don't let him out, and then it's got Ethel Kennedy's name scrawled. I mean, who knows if she actually signed it? She's
right.
Like,
I saw the picture, and I was surprised because, to tell you the truth, I thought she was dead.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she hasn't said much about it, and it's just that's what I don't understand about the Kennedy. And that's why RFK Jr. is so different. You know,
a lot of the Kennedy family are phonies. You got to remember they were born with a silver spoon in their mouth.
Yep.
You know, Grandpa Joe was as criminal as you possibly could get. There have been a few movies that were actually worthwhile watching about the real Kennedy family. And you, to compare them, you know, multimillionaires, you know, white multimillionaires with, you know, poor black folk, there's no comparison. Okay, you piss off a black person, they're going to take action. You piss off a white person, they flip the page.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just a, it's a shame, but I don't have much hope that Newsom or Larry Elder, whoever, I don't think any of those guys would sign it.
I guess it remains to be seen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, it remains to be seen. I'm seeing if we have anything.
You know, you got Biden now saying he's going to release documents on 9/11. You know they're not going to be full documents.
Yeah, well, it's like the JFK. I mean, do they really think there's going to be like a okay, here, this is how we're going to do it, and they're going to delineate, okay, you know, we're going to say that, you know, magic jet fuel cocktail did this while we're planting bombs in the building.
Right. Well, you started out at the beginning of the show saying, you know, I could be the longest internet radio show.
Yes, yes.
And I am.
You are.
And one of the people that helped me, who I helped him, was Greg Palast, right in 2000. Mm-hmm. And Greg Palast always refers to me as the inventor of internet radio. Hmm. And he credits his career in America to my show, because he had done the best work on the stolen election of 2000. He's still covering stolen elections. He's still covering what's going on in Georgia. He's still going, you know, still he's indefatigable. So, you know, I've been around a long time, and I honestly believed that the stolen election of 2000 would be the biggest story I would ever cover. But yeah, people have short memories. Okay. And now you have, you know, Trump, who's still saying that, you know, the big lie, you know, he won the election. I think whatever usefulness he had to our owners passed. So there was no reason for them to keep him there. Or maybe they just realized that his untreated syphilis brain can't be controlled like it used to be. Or maybe they just didn't want anybody who, you know, is spoiling his pants while he's walking down a ramp. So the thought of him, another 4 years of him, it would have been too much. I actually told my audience that I would have stopped doing my show.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it. I mean, the anxiety was too much.
Well, you weren't alone. There were obviously millions of people that felt like you. Let's see here. Because we're going to talk about Dave McGowan in a second, but there's some questions about him before we play the first clip. Maria and Alyssa and the writer of the Franklin cover-up did a documentary on Dave?
Well, yeah, they came out here. It's a couple of years now and interviewed me. But as far as I know, the documentary is not out. Okay. Alyssa is his daughter, and yes, she was going to let me know. But I had a film crew here for quite some time covering Dave and his work and, of course, his untimely demise.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, and there's a question here about that too. Said, and that's the interview I remember best of Dave's is the really haunting one of his last, I think his last video interview too, the Caravan to Midnight with John B. Wells. He told Dave at the end, where he really just dissected the Boston bombing so well. He said, told Dave at the end of that show, he should probably quit smoking or they will kill you. Someone on YouTube called Phoenix Archangel threatened Dave and named the type of cancer. Dave tracked the username and confronted him. You know anything about that?
Well, I do know that. And I had told Dave that it wasn't, you know, people thought it had to do with weird scenes in Laurel Canyon.
Yeah.
And I told Dave, no, your work on the Boston bombing can get you killed. Are you sure you want to continue to do this? And you have to understand, Dave was, even though he was very, seemed very bubbly and outgoing on my show. And by the way, Dave was a co-host of my show for 14 years, yes, exclusively. He didn't do anyone else's show because he didn't trust anybody else. But I told him, you know, that he needed to be careful. And he hated public appearances. He wasn't the type of guy that would enjoy doing the book signings like he did. And once that video went up, he got a lot of death threats, not just against him, but, you know, threatening his family. And to Dave, you know, his daughters were everything. And, you know, Dave and I had a lot of off-air conversations. I don't even know that I feel it's time to expose much of what we talked about yet. But suffice it to say that Dave was very aware that he was under constant surveillance, that he was being set up, and that he was murdered. He was very aware of that in our private conversations.
Yeah, there was a and again, I think, you know, because if people who've listened to my show, I Protest, one of the first shows I did was we had Maria Heller and Craig McGowan on, and we just did a tribute to Dave. And you know, I remember, I don't know if it was Craig or you were saying something about there was a strange woman that kind of entered his life and near the end there. And I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly, but it was something where I think Craig or you, maybe his daughter, I don't know, kind of suspected this woman. You know, am I remembering it wrong?
Well, yeah, she kind of just showed up, you know, like a groupie.
Yeah.
And then got closer and closer to him. And then, unfortunately, Dave lost his family home. He had no place to go.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't go just anywhere because he had to take his dog with him. His dog was like his best friend. And this woman invited him to move in with her. And that's when the constant surveillance, he felt he had no privacy. He would talk to me inside her garage, whispering on the phone. So it was really bad. And because Dave knew what else I do besides radio, he had asked me to look ahead for him because I do.
Well,
so
there's
certain things I can see and certain things I can't.
I was shocked. But I was shocked, you know, to hear. But let's start. Why don't we play the first clip of Dave? Now, so let's play clip number one with Dave and let the audience who's not familiar with him listen to some of the brilliance of Dave McGowan.
You could start with something simple like this little quote on page 13. Former CIA Director William Colby: "The Central Intelligence Agency owns everyone of any significance in the major media."
I think that that's really becoming more and more obvious.
Exactly.
To anyone that's really paying attention, that there's just so many issues that are not being addressed, or that are being just grossly misrepresented by virtually every avenue of the American media, print and broadcast media. That, I mean, how else do you really explain the fact that so much of this information just does not get through? You know, despite the appearance of having this great free press that
right. Well, you had a quote somewhere.
Model to the rest of the world of you know how a free and independent press should run.
Exactly.
But in fact, you know, the information that gets through to the majority of Americans is just ridiculously slanted and controlled and.
Right. Well, you know, 2 days ago, I think Bush was talking to a fifth grade class. Talk about being amongst his peers. But he was talking to a fifth grade class, and he told the reporters the things that make America great and stand for democracy is our free press. I mean, I almost threw up when I heard that.
Yeah, I mean, it really is just astounding, how much information is the press.
Right, and then Catherine Graham, who was raised to the level of Mother Teresa after she died, you had a quote in the book by her, who said, you know, it's really up to us to decide what the Americans need to hear or not, and that the press should be able to just print stories they think we should hear.
Yeah, that's another quote. That's quite a notorious quote that she made to a CIA dinner or something, wasn't it? That she, Yeah, she made.
And then there they were making her, you know, Mother Teresa after she died, and I was like, wow, what the hell is this about?
Yeah, she gave a very interesting definition of what a free press was.
Right, a free press according to her. And now, you know, Bush has done, you know, with this International Tribunal Court, you know, well, I'm taking my marbles back. I decided not to play.
Yeah, that's just unbelievable. I mean, just the sheer arrogance of
Well, now he's managed to piss off. I didn't even think it was possible, but it's, if he didn't piss off enough countries at us, now with that, he's managed to piss Canada off at us. Canada!
Quite a feat, yeah.
It's like you got to go out of your way to get people in Canada upset over anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the saber rattling is just getting ridiculous, you know? I mean, the list of nations that have been alluded to that are on our hit list just seems to grow and grow every day.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
we just
the papers from the last week while I was gone, and it seems like, you know, Cuba has now been added. There mm-hmm. was a front page article either today or yesterday in the Times accusing Cuba of spreading biowarfare technology to, you know, various terrorist sponsoring nations, and it's just unbelievable. I mean, it's,
well,
you know, the list seems to be rather endless. You know, Iraq, Iran,
right.
Somalia, you know, it's just Colombia, and
maybe it just got to end in the letter A.
Great stuff, boy. That it was. I know it brings back memories for you. But so how did you get connected with Dave McGowan?
He sent me his first book. So I think it was Understanding the F Word, His humor, in the book, his position on where he came from. I called and asked him if he'd come on the show. And he was a little reticent because, like I said, Dave was very shy. He was an introvert. But once we started talking, you know, he learned to trust me. And something a lot of people may not know is Dave was a Mensa student. He was super brilliant. But his sense of humor and my sense of humor, we just bounced off each other better than any comedy act you could think of on the most serious topics. Then we moved, you know, then I asked him if he would co-host, and he did, you know. And I remember there were a couple of times because he was also running his construction business, trying to survive like most Americans, that he forgot when we were going to do a show. And I would call him and he said, oh, shit, I forgot. I didn't prepare anything. I said, you don't have to prepare anything. And those ended up being our best shows because we would just play off each other. He was... Without a doubt, I couldn't have asked for a better co-host than Dave.
Did you ever get to meet him in person?
Never, not once.
Oh, wow.
As a matter of fact, when he lost his house, I told him he can come and live with me, bring his dog. But he didn't want to leave his business and what was familiar to him, which I understood. But I certainly would have given him a place to live.
Well, that's the world we live in. I tell people all the time, I mean, people like you and Chuck, or just a couple of them. I have so many. All my best friends now are cyber friends. People John Barber I've met a couple times, but none of the mm-hmm. rest of them I've met. Some of them I talk to every day, and I feel like they're so. It's a different world now. The internet is connected.
I could take it one step further. The man who handles my website and has probably for the past 10 years. I have not met him once in person. I don't even know what he looks like. All I know is he does a great job for me. We do talk on the phone. I like his voice. But one thing I wanted to thank my listeners for, where Dave is concerned. When it got really down to the wire for Dave, I don't know, maybe 3 months before he got free of this freak world, he had said to me the one thing that he regretted, besides, of course, not being able to walk his girls down the aisle, was he always wanted to take his daughters on a trip to Hawaii.
Yeah.
But he couldn't afford it. Okay. So I put that out to my audience. And within, I would say, 2 weeks, he had the money to go to Hawaii. And he called me crying, literally crying, because he couldn't believe the kindness that was shown to him, that people would do that for him. And I said, Dave, do you realize how many lives you have touched that people would be willing to do anything for you?
Yeah.
So he did get to take his girls to Hawaii before he left the planet.
Well, that was such a great story. And Chris in the chat room, who is my number, this guy helps me out so much, and he knows how much I appreciate it. He sends me so much information, but he's a huge fan of Dave McGowan's too. So he's excited, and he's talking about a lot of stuff. But he said that he found Dave's old buried website with his photography and humor and anecdotes, and he gave it to Craig. Craig thought it was lost. So he finds these. Yeah, and Anonymous 800 says, you know, one of the weirdest things I thought, you know, was the fact that Dave died on November 22nd of all days.
I know. I found it fitting, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it was.
I told him before he left, I said, Dave, if there's any way you can communicate with me from the other side, just tell me definitively who killed Kennedy. So we had a couple of good laughs about it, you know, because I used to say if there is anybody that we should send back in time in history to give us the real scoop, especially because before he died, he started his series on Lincoln and we never got to finish that. It would have been Dave. I mean, no one was as thorough as he was. I do that too all the time. I like the fact that he was not just so thorough, but he had a great sense of humor, and you read it. You could read his humor. You know, one of the things I do on my show, especially my news shows, because my news shows are like rapid fire news that nobody hears anywhere else, I inject a lot of humor, because if I don't, I don't think people could handle it. You know, and I have people, you know, they'll download my show, take it to the gym, and then she'll say, I was in the middle of a set and you said this and that, and I thought I was going to wet my pants. Because laughter is balance for fear. And we're living in an energy of fear 24/7. And if you can learn to laugh at these things and laugh at these people who think they're smarter than us, but they're not, it certainly helps to take the edge off.
Absolutely. There's a question in the chat room. Does Maria know if some of the lost Dave shows might be somewhere?
Oh, I have them all. They're not lost.
Although I think, well, let's go back around their chat room. He was mentioning, what was the name of it? Send in the Clowns with Dave episodes.
Those were the shows. I still have a lot of my shows with Dave on site. Not all of them. But I have every one of them backed up. You know, I don't have the time or the wherewithal to go through 300 DVDs and try to put them all together, dig them all out, and you know, try to find them, piece them together, or whatever. But since your producer Chuck O'Chelly is a co-host of my show twice a month,
I
told Chuck that if I go before him, my children know he's the only one that gets all my archive shows to do what he wants with, because I trust him.
Absolutely. Well, he's doing a great job producing this show, and I really appreciate it. In the chat room, Craig told me, and this I think this is still Chris, that Alyssa accidentally deleted Dave's last two unreleased Lincoln chapters. She gave it to some guy to open, and everything on Dave's laptop was gone. Do you know anything about it? Because I was going to ask you, where do you think
I don't know anything about that.
Well, I don't know where he was going with Lincoln, because I mean it was fascinating, but
I still should have some of those on site. He made it very clear that John Wilkes Booth had nothing to do with the assassination Lincoln.
What did you think? The way he was framing it, it was like what we've seen in recent times with Sandy Hook and things like that, where I got the idea that he was saying it didn't happen. I mean, that was because, I mean, the way he had me thinking that.
No. He wasn't saying it didn't happen. He was digging up all the co-conspirators. Right. And the very fact, you know, one of the things I remember, which I often repeat, when they put up posters of John Wilkes Booth, who was a very well-known actor at the time.
Yes.
It was not John Wilkes Booth. It was his brother.
Right. Stanton did that. Yeah, exactly. And there's still classified documents on Lincoln's murder. Amazing. You know, ask yourself that when you're talking about 9/11 documents.
That's what I said. I would have liked to put – when we were talking about it, I told Dave, I'd like to put you in a time machine and send you back. Because I could just see Dave sleuthing around on the ground during that whole fiasco.
Wearing a deerstalker hat, yeah. Dave was the first 9/11 truther on 9/12, and Dave's work on Columbine was not matched. And you know, if you had any doubt, I still think Dave's masterpiece was Wagging the Moondoggy. That knocked me off the fence, because I was kind of on the fence.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was a great series. And, you know, all his pictures were so important. So, you know, if anybody's got his old site with all those pictures and stuff, find a way to post it. But Leg and the Moondog, oh, my God. And we laughed. I mean, we laughed in every single episode of that. I don't know how many we did on that. It had to be at least 10.
Yeah.
Because once he got started on something, it was, all right, I got another chapter, Maria, and I'm going to send it to you. So with this way, I would know what we're going to talk about on our next show. So, you know, even Laurel Canyon, I have no idea how many shows we did on that. Maybe at least 10, maybe more. A lot of my listeners tell me, though, that they ruined the 60s for them. When you sent me your first book, I think I actually wrote you and said that your writing reminded me of Dave McGowan's.
Yes. You made those comparisons right away. And I kind of knew, I discovered Dave McGowan by just doing an internet search. I was interested in Phil Hartman's death. I thought it was pretty strange. And as soon as I searched for it, it came up some stuff Dave wrote about it. And then I just went to that website, the CIA covert information, whatever, I forget what the acronym was, but and I saw all this great stuff, and I read all the Laurel Canyon chapters, I read the Lincoln stuff, I read the 9/11 stuff, and I read the Wagging the Moondoggy, most notably, and then I read the book later too, The Weird Seeds Inside the Canyon. But yeah, this, and I'm flattered. You and somebody mentioned Miles Mathis on here, who is one of the biggest characters out there. He thinks everything is fake, but he coupled me with Dave McGowan too. Years ago, you know, I found somebody alerted me that he had written on there that both McGowan, before Dave died, that McGowan and I were ghosts, that neither one of us were real. We were disinformation experts that they invented.
Well, you know, he's a little wrong on that, because Dave McGowan was late coming to the party about 9/11. Okay. And he was sorry about that. But he really didn't even look at it for, I don't know, a couple of years after it had happened. So I don't know, he could have been busy with his life, busy with his family, whatever. Okay, but he was not immediately on it. You know, so I can remember the early people on 9/11. You know, the first videos that came out, you know, Tom Flacco, who probably people don't even remember.
Anymore. Oh, I remember him. Yes.
Right. I mean, I had Tom on my show when I was doing live.
You had Tom Flacco. Wow.
Yeah. I was doing a live show with Tom Flacco on 9/11. And I had a hacker who used to watch my site because it was live. I used to get hacked a lot. And I would have remember Yahoo Instant Message? So I'm talking to Tom Flacco about the irregularities of 9/11 when my hacker pops up a note and says, the CIA just connected to your show. So this is how long they've been watching my show, okay?
I don't doubt it.
So I take a quick break. I said to Tom, we need to stop for a minute. I said, I've just been informed that the boys and girls of the CIA have just tapped into my show. So while you're listening to my show, I said, you guys, grab yourselves a cup of Joe. You might learn something. And remember, when your government gets tired of you, your retirement plan is death. So as soon as I say that, my hacker pops up. They just signed off. And that was before the Patriot Act, so they couldn't hit my show directly. They wiggled it halfway around the world through China back to tap my show. And when the live show was over, it was still going for 12 minutes. So that's how long it took for them to be able to break into my site.
Wow.
I wouldn't have minded if they were paid subscribers, but they weren't. But as soon as they knew that they were made, they were gone.
Well, I want to let's play the second and last clip from Dave McGowan, and then we'll have plenty of time to talk about him and then some other things. So go ahead and play the last McGowan clip, please.
I realized that this material was just so unrelentingly grim and you know, negative, that it had to be sort of lightened up a little bit, you know, the spoonful of sugar theory, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to inject as much humor necessarily black humor for the most part, but try to lighten the load a little bit. I mean, I didn't want to turn people off immediately that with just, you know, page after page after page of just dreary, you know.
But you know what? First of all, there were short little vignettes. They're easy to read. Second of all, once a person picks up this book, I guarantee you, Dave, whether they like it or not, they're not going to be able to put it down.
People have said that to me, actually. One guy that interviewed me actually referred to it as the world's scariest bathroom reader.
Well, I mean, hey, you know, a lot of people got their college education sitting on the Johns, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I would think that putting this book down would be like walking out of a Stephen King movie before it's over. It's just not going to happen. You know, if it's good or if it's bad, there's something about your childish curiosity, you know, that little kid that questions everything, that says, I have to see what else it says. Because it can't get any worse. And yes, it does.
Yeah.
That was the good thing. I was like, what else could he possibly have in here? And then you hit on the incarceration of America. And at one point, one of your funny little titles were, we're locking them up as fast as we can. You know, it was like I could hear you saying these jokes, and I was like, oh, my God, that means there must be something terrible after this. And right after we're locking them up as fast as we can, here's what it says. It says, there are 11.5 million admissions to prison or jail annually. Every year, more people are arrested in jail for a few days than the entire combined population of Alaska, Delaware, Hawaii, Idaho, Maine, Montana, New Hampshire, North Dakota, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Vermont, and Wyoming. I flipped out.
Yeah, the statistics are just absolutely unbelievable. There's another one in there, I think, on just the state of California alone.
Right, welcome to California.
Holds more inmates than, like, I don't know, there's like a whole string of countries listed, I think, like France, Germany, Japan, Singapore, and a few others combined.
Right.
The one state of California, we have more people under lock and key than 6 or 8, 10, European and Asian countries combined.
Right.
One state. And it's
very sick. And well, then you go on with another one of your cute little quips. You say, the point is that we're keeping dangerous criminals off the street. And then you co-balance that with this National Criminal Justice Commission report. 84% of the increase in admissions to prison since 1980 were nonviolent offenders. So,
yeah,
I mean...
primarily nonviolent drug offenders.
And then you tackle something that a lot of people...
Most of whom are black or brown.
Right.
As the other statistics in the books indicate.
You know what? When I was a younger person working in New York, I worked in an insurance firm, and I had this angry black guy come in one day, and he said something that was so good that I remembered it for the rest of my life. His policy got canceled, and he thought he was being singled out for it, and he came in spouting off a line I never heard. He goes, when you're white, you're born right. When you're brown, you're born down. But when you're black, you got to get back. And you know what? I haven't seen that change in 30 years.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, how clever. And he doesn't have a gun in his hand, so I don't have to worry about it. I was like, can you repeat that so I can remember it for the rest of my life? But, you know, a lot of people take the attitude like they do with the prisoners now in Guantanamo Bay, okay? Well, they're prisoners. Who cares? You know, I'm not a criminal, so I don't have to worry about these things.
Oh, yeah, I have people say that to me all the time, you know, they say, well, you know, as long as you're not a criminal, as long as you're not breaking the law, you know, why do you care? Why do you care if the government now has the authority to monitor your emails or to, you know, tap your phone line or to come into your house when you're not home and
Right, and go through your underwear drawer or whatever else gives them the thrill.
that's an attitude that I encounter all the time, and it's very difficult to...
Right, and people, you know, still believe that, you know, well, and even if they go into our prisons, after all, there's such wonderful rehabilitation centers. You know, there's nothing rehabilitating about prison, not now, not ever. And, I mean, what you exposed there, I mean, my stomach was really turning with the electric belt and the way they strap them in the chairs and the people that suffocate with the towels over their head while they're strapped in these chairs. And
I mean, what goes on in prisons can only be described fairly as torture.
Ah, great stuff. Well, he's a civil libertarian after my own heart. Boy, that's exactly it. We need more people like him. There aren't many voices like that left. Somebody asked you in the chat room, Who would you, I don't know if you'd have either one of these people, but who would you, Maria, have as a guest first, Alex Jones or Jim Fetzer?
Fetzer. Fetzer was a good co-host for me for many years. I'm not going to put down his early work. The guy, it was brilliant. A lot of his books were brilliant. And then he joined the Trump bandwagon. Alex Jones, he doesn't even exist in my reality. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I think at one point he had threatened, I think, me and Dave. He didn't want Dave to say certain things or whatever on my show, or he was going to threaten us with a lawsuit. I don't even remember the details. And I said to Dave, why would I even give him, you know, why would I even give him mention on my show? So, you know, look at Alex Jones's life now. Doesn't look too pretty now, does it?
No, wasn't it? Whatever the move was there, tying himself to Trump like that, he lost a lot more people than he
Listen, he's been on the wrong side since he began. And I constantly tell people, telling you a half-truth is still lying. You either tell people all the truth or you're full of shit. You know, and I only had the unfortunate experience of seeing him. I wouldn't let him touch me or shake my hand at a 9/11 conference in Chicago. When he saw me, I was with Barry Zwicker. I don't know if you remember Barry Zwicker from Canada.
Yeah.
He did great work on 9/11.
Yes,
I was with Barry and one of the other 9/11 experts that I had on my show. He saw them, but he hadn't seen me. When he saw me in the middle of those two guys, I think it was Jim Mars, he made the fastest U-turn that I've ever seen anybody make. it was like I was – he was a vampire and I was loaded with garlic. And I never had any use for him. I'm sure he has no use for me. Listen, everybody pays when they leave this planet. Everybody pays on a soul level for what they do and what they don't do. So my thing is I'm leaving with clean hands. So, you know, these people are getting their rewards now and damaging so many people, leading so many people off a cliff. You know, and I don't care. It could be TV news, your favorite person. I know a lot of my listeners really are enamored of Rachel Maddow. You know what? That's half truths too. She's reading a script. She's getting $30 million a year. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to tell people the truth. What do people say to me that have been with my show since it started? Believe me or not, there are still people who are still with me all these years. Your story never changes. You're always consistent. And the answer is simple. The truth doesn't change. Truth is truth.
Right. Absolutely.
And I believe that people who are worthy recognize the truth and are willing to help to support my show, to keep my show going. You know, I'm not a millionaire. I'm not selling vitamins and ivermectin and whatever. You know, I'm in it like everybody else. You know, I'm collecting my Social Security. So for people who are seniors, you know that you've got to have not too much money to collect your Social Security. Okay, because if you have too much money, your Social Security disappears. A lot of it does, especially insurance premiums. So I do what I do because I must. I don't know why. Maybe there's something wrong with me. In the early years, I used to want to quit like every other week because the workload is too much. But now I have it down to a system. I'm sure even while I'm sleeping, I'm probably doing a show in my dreams.
Well, there's questions here about Jack Blood. First of all, did Jack Blood help you start your show? And is Jack Blood coming back? And wasn't Jack Blood associated with Alex Jones at one time? Or am I not getting that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, he got screwed over. He got screwed over good by Alex Jones.
Yeah.
You know, Alex Jones, you know, used to have him sub for him once in a while.
Yeah,
he was on that same station, which was funded by two big trunk full of gold that was delivered to the door. And when Jack would take over for him, Jack was more popular because Jack's way smarter. Okay, Jack was an excellent producer, but he was an excellent co-host. Jack and I were hot together. Period. And then he started stealing Jack's advertisers. And then he started moving Jack's show around to, you know, obscure hours. I tried to warn Jack, like I tried to warn so many, even people that were guests on my show, not to get involved with him. But for whatever reason, men are stubborn and they fell for it. And they all got screwed. You know, I mean, look at Charlie Sheen's career after he teamed up with him. It's in the toilet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some of the people I had on my show that thought, oh, they were hitting the big time going on Alex Jones' show. Boom, they hit the toilet. Okay, and right after they, you know, crash and burn, they contact me to try to get back on my show. Well, that's never going to happen. If you're associated with that show, that's not a plus to get on my show. So, I believe in that expression, be careful on the people you meet on the way up, because they're the same people you're going to meet on the way down.
That's right.
I'm sure your audience is saying, what kind of woman is this? I'm an Italian girl from Brooklyn, New York. What do you expect?
Well, that's part of your charm. Well, let's—I want to make sure we get a little 9/11 talking, because it's 20 years coming up on the 20th year anniversary, and I'm sure you had lots of exciting 9/11 shows over the year because you were already on the air before 9/11. So, talk about what you're impressed, because I don't think we're any closer to—I don't think right now. You—I'm sure you heard about Spike Lee.
I'm so pissed at Spike Lee.
I mean, again, what does this say? Here's a guy who comes off as the most arrogant, you can't tell me what to do. The man's never going to tell me what to do.
Right.
And he gets a little bit of criticism. He backs down like the biggest cucked Republican you've ever seen. What? I mean, so disappointing.
All of Spike Lee's movies were superb. Okay. He was one of my favorite, notice past tense, was one of my favorite movie producers. Watching his movies was like watching the neighborhoods I grew up in. And they were important movies. When I read that he caved and took off architects, engineers for 9/11 Truth, I was done with him. I said that on my show. I'm done with him. He no longer exists in my reality. Now, you have to understand, when I say somebody no longer exists in my reality, they don't. It's like they just drop out of my brain cell, and nothing they can do can ever fix that. Okay. I've had architects for 9/11 Truth on my show. I've had pilots for 9/11 Truth on my show. I've had firefighters for 9/11 Truth on my show. You name the group, they were all on my show. I have a whole separate section on 9/11. I had to have done at least 200 shows on it. You're going to ask me, what do I think after all of that and everybody I've interviewed? To me, 9/11 was a Cheney Rumsfeld production. I think Bush, I agree with Kitty Kelly, she was too dumb to organize something like that. If he was involved in it, that was a surprise to him, because nobody protected Bush leaving Florida. But Cheney was immediately brought into a bunker.
That's right.
They wanted to get those wars on against those seven countries. You know, he had to get Saddam Hussein because, oh, he said something about his father, which was probably true. And it was a good way to usher in Bill Clinton's Patriot Act that was sitting on the shelf, and to create two illegal wars, and to start the fear and the hatred of Muslims in America. You got to always ask who benefited, and we didn't. Okay, so it's 20 years later. Most Americans, it's going to be just like the Kennedy assassination. You poll Americans all these years later, and they know we got a snow job on JFK. No one believes the official story. And I think 9/11 will be the same way. So now we've got them 20 years later coming out with all these puff pieces about 9/11 to reinforce the lie. I won't watch any of them.
But think of how much worse it is even than JFK. At least in the JFK assassination, every television special was Oswald did it. But most of the time they would have a critic, Mark Lane, Cyril Weck, somebody would come on, and they would give him a few minutes to kind of, you know, state something. They might take it out of context, but nobody is allowed on these shows. And here, consider what Spike Lee did. All he did, now he did, I think more controversially, he expressed his own doubts about, you know, steel melting with jet fuel and all that to the New York Times. I think that's what really pissed him off. But all he had was a few, I'm sure there were snippets of comments from Richard Gage or whoever from Architects of Engineers.
Yeah, less than 20 minutes of it. But you know what? He did keep in William Rodriguez's interview.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Now, I interviewed William Rodriguez, and that's still on my site. Yeah. You can't listen to it without crying.
Yeah, yeah. And it's he's.
But still, you know, all these episodes, all these new series on 9/11, I won't watch any of them because I know this is going to be a little bit of truth and a whole lot of bull crap.
Yeah, it's just it's such a monumental line. I call the America that existed before 9/11 America 1.0. I think we've been a different country ever since then. I think it changed, you know, the Patriot Act, and you know how many people in Congress even opposed the Patriot Act. I don't know if any did, but almost nobody, and nobody has since. And then you have the Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Security, which is again pushed. Yeah, and it's pushed by the so-called party of small government, Republicans. Do you see anybody talking about getting rid of the Homeland Security Department? Nobody.
Of course not. That's there for good, you know. And people, you know, like Dave said, or you said, I've listened to so much today. You know, people say, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. Well, you don't have to be doing anything wrong. Just watch Enemy of the State with Will Smith, okay? Yeah. You don't have to be doing anything wrong for them to erase you.
What do you got to hide? You know, why can't we search your car? Why can't we come into your house? What are you hiding?
Right.
too many Americans that are saying, yeah, you got nothing to hide. What, you know, and that's unfortunately, that's the attitude. And that's why we keep losing, Maria, because more people think that instead of saying you have no right. I don't care what if he's got 12 dead bodies in there still, I'd rather protect everyone's civil rights, but have you do it the right way.
But exactly. Well, you know, like I said, too bad the whole country didn't grow up in Brooklyn because we have so many expressions like, why do you want to know? It's none of your BI business.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Why are you asking? Are you writing a book about me?
Yeah.
Leave that chapter out. I mean, we had a snap for everything. But, you know, people are so afraid, just afraid all the time. That they're willing to capitulate their freedom. You know, they're surveilling themselves with their cell phones, you know, with their tracking. I mean, this is like, you know, George Orwell's wet dream. And I don't know. I don't know if America can survive. You know, according to the show I did this morning, which some people may or may not pay any attention or think it's all bullshit on astrology, with this great astrologer from California. He says that the next 2 years are going to be hell for us. We're either going to be the end of this country or the phoenix rising out of the ashes. But he didn't sound too optimistic.
I'm not optimistic at all because we're just on this absurd COVID and lockdown and vaccine stuff. I mean,
to my son every now and then. He screams from his room. I'm sick of everything. COVID. I'm sick of it.
I mean, we're on the basis of the unvaccinated are on the verge of becoming, I mean, we're looking at an apartheid situation, a Jim Crow situation. I don't think today's
Civil
left.
War.
Yeah, right. I mean, I would not be surprised to see some of these so-called supposed liberals say, you know, you can't use the same bathroom as me. You can't drink from the same water fountain. I don't think they'd have a trace of irony to say that because that's the way they think of us.
Listen, I don't want to be around somebody who's just gotten a vaccine.
Yeah, I think we have more to fear from them. You know,
right.
Really,
that shit's contagious. I mean, look at you know, even Israel. Israel, 59% of the serious cases in their hospitals now are people that have had the double vaccine.
Right, right.
Okay, but you're not going to hear that on, you know, on TV news. Okay.
No. Well, they're just
I do follow the Israeli Times, so I know what's going on there. You know, all our young men are having heart problems taking these shots. Okay.
Just the fact that they're covering
What are we going to see 2 to 5 years from now? Is it going to be the thalidomide tragedy all over again?
Yeah. The CDC has already told us, they're telling us, not a conspiracy theorist, that by far, very conservatively, more than double, and some people think a lot more than that, people have died from this vaccine or these vaccines and all the other vaccines combined since 1901.
All right. And on a low estimate, I just got a report, 45,000 in the United States. In Europe, they say over a million.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's you're not taking into account maybe the more tragic cases of that little 12-year-old girl that I saw on TV that's in a wheelchair now because she got vaccinated. All the people you talked about with heart problems, so many young athletes in high school who have this is tragic, and they're never going to get rid of that heart condition now, all because of a stupid vaccine that they didn't even need, because whatever this is, they were at no risk at all for it. I mean, it's ridiculous, but.
They did the same thing with that HPV shot that they wanted to give all our daughters so that they wouldn't get cervical cancer, although cervical cancer is such a small percentage of the type of cancers out there. And then the kids are getting crippled, going into comas, this, that, the other thing from that shot. And then what did the geniuses decide to do? Well, let's give it to the boys. Well, I don't know any man that's ever had cervical cancer.
Yeah, we're running down on time. I only have a few minutes left. I want to make sure to give you a chance to promote everybody. You should subscribe to Maria, maria.net, but tell everyone where they can find you, what time you're on, and everything else you're doing. Just you go ahead and promote away.
All right, here's the big promo. My website is meria.net. It's subscription-based, which keeps the government out, keeps me protected. Gives us a little club of our own. It's always there. Every show is there 24 hours a day. I do 3 or 4 shows a week. I send you out a note when the new show is posted, which is usually by noon. Every show is downloadable, even the McGowan show. So you can download them, save them, put them on a disc, spread them around to your friends, take it to the gym, take it with you. And the price range is as cheap as Bosch, okay? I can't make it any simpler. I mean, whether you're a senior or a student, I had done a $9.95 a month. Anybody can use that amount. If you're hard up, because I know we're living in another recession, regardless of what they say, how great our economy's doing, your support, and the show is commercial-free. It's straight talk. You want to hear me talk to Eustace Mullen? There's no advertisements. It's an hour straight talk. But I can't make you do anything. If you want to get a shot, you get it. If you don't, don't. And I don't judge people for what they choose to do. I don't judge people on their color. I don't judge you on your sexuality, because we're all in this together. And that's the way I feel. So either you support the show or you don't. That's your choice. But I can tell you this, you got about 750 hours of straight, pure education there.
Well, it's quite a legacy. And again, Chris in the chat room is still saying, please, Maria, can you find the other Dave show? So he's convinced there's some other Dave shows out there. So I don't know. But if there is, because certainly nobody has chronicled the legacy of Dave McGowan more than Maria.
If I had time, money, where I could hire somebody to organize those 300 discs and go through them and line up all the shows I did with Dave, of which there must be hundreds, I would do that. But I can't do it, and I can't do it myself.
Well, you're a precious resource, and I wanted to pay tribute to you in some small way, because this is really
I love being interviewed by other people. It's like a Mensa test for me. See how good my memory is.
Yeah, no, you're great being interviewed. As good as you are being an interviewer, and I've been honored to be on your show several times, and I really appreciate your support, and I hope people will support Maria Heller, because again, your work is, your legacy is amazing, and if you've really been on the, and I don't doubt you, I know you're one of, if you're not the longest lasting person on alternative radio, because this is what we need, platforms like this, like your show. All the shows, that's the only hope we have, because as we talked about 9/11, you're not going to see any alternative views. You're not going to see anything different from the pablum, the establishment lies that you get in everything else, but you have to go to shows like yours, and that's the only place you're going to...
I'll tell you what, Donald, there are fewer and fewer. So many people have dropped away. They just couldn't take it anymore.
No, and the censorship that's out there, and it's amazing. We have to try to keep the FCC's hands and then the establishment's hands off the internet, because this is the only way we can inform people, because we can reach however many people we're reaching out there. We're reaching an audience that obviously you're not going to be able to reach on any television network, any mainstream, you know, newspaper or whoever's left reading those. But so my hat's off to you. You know, you're one of my heroes, and I hope the audience realize it. And thank you so much. And
thank you, Donald, and keep doing the great work you're doing.
Well, I will do my best. You set a high bar for all of us. So thanks so much for joining us with Maria Heller on The Donald Jeffrey Show.